You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
This episode of Wicked Horror Show was broadcast live to Facebook. We're happy to welcome back director, writer, producer, Ryan Bellegarde. We had him on before for his movie Gremlin, and this time we have him on for the new movie Jurassic Games. Sorry, The Jurassic Games. We're also joined briefly, by one of the actresses from the movie. She was awesome in it. Katie Burgess. So as always, if you like what you hear, head over to facebook.com/thedorkening every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show just like this one. Open chat room where you can interact with us and the guests. And also head over to thedorkening.com for all the other shows on the Dorkening Podcast Network. Some really good stuff. Secret Underground Hideout. You gotta check it out. A regular Sunday show called The Dorkening and the alternating Thursday show. That's right, alternating. Ultimate Video Game Show. Plus we may have some new shows in the works. And also our website was hacked, so good luck. And lastly, thanks to our sponsors, Deadly Grounds Coffee. They're phenomenal. Just bought a whole big bunch at a con recently, and it's already almost gone because I'm addicted. So yeah, head over to deadlygroundscoffee.com, pick up some liquid awesome for your mouth. First, enjoy the show.
Okay, and here we go. With us today is Kevin.
What's up, everybody?
Wolfman. Thank you for keeping it below 20 decibels.
Yeah,
for real. Tony.
What is going on, people?
Yo, yo.
Hey, everybody.
And special guest number one, Mr. Ryan Bellegarde.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We previously had you for Gremlin and Jurassic Games. And we have a shot up here for Katie Burgess, also in Jurassic Games. She's going to be calling in quite shortly. So what we'll do is we'll start things off and I'll just patch her in when she calls.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. So Ryan, I'll start things off. So yeah, we had talked to you previously with Gremlin, and I want to say with Gremlin, it's another movie that I was kind of surprised. It's usually not my thing, and I really enjoyed it. So when I found out that you were behind Jurassic Games, I was just like, let me, and then again, very, very pleased with this one. It's a really good time. I know, like, just like Tony, we're not huge fans of CG, but in the movies that you're making, it's appropriate. Like,
okay,
yeah, the kind of monsters that you're using are, yeah, it would make sense to use CG. Like, if you're looking at a slasher movie and they're, you know, going to kill us, you know, whatever, and it's CG blood that looks horrible, that's right, an issue. But right, with the movies that you're making, it's very much appropriate. So I definitely recommend the movies that we've seen from you. There's other ones. I want to see this Army of Frankenstein stuff. Still haven't seen it. But anyways.
Army of Frankenstein was my first movie. And it didn't have really any CG in it. It was a lot more. It kind of did, as far as like we took one guy in a Frankenstein costume and duplicated him a lot.
Made a bunch of them, yeah.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, hey, cool. I'm
jealous. Yeah,
but I would say if you want to watch Army of Frankenstein, I'm not saying I'm not proud of it, but I'm saying that you could watch that and hopefully say, oh, that's like, you know, freshman year and sophomore year and then senior year. You know, I hope you can.
Oh, totally. I totally do. Yeah. I love to see the progression and stuff like that. But
yeah, so
Jurassic Games, I told you earlier that the way I described it to somebody at work today was Battle Royale mixed with a little bit of Hunger Games with Jurassic Park. And they were just like, I'm sold. I want to see this movie. So, and you know, it's definitely, I want to say it's, you know, obviously you had some inspiration from some other movies, but am I close there with your inspiration? Or, well, you mentioned another scene too, that from a movie that, you know, I don't know if you want to bring it up, but that you, from a movie that you referenced from when you're a child.
Yeah, it's Hunger Games meets Jurassic Park meets Swiss Family Robinson.
Okay.
No. I think the there is a scene in the movie that I kind of borrowed from Swiss Family Robinson where they trap a tiger, but it was brought to me with, hey, let's make a movie called Jurassic Games. That's kind of a mixture of Hunger Games and Jurassic Park. We wanted dinosaurs versus convicts. And, you know, I kind of threw in my own dash of Ready Player One and before Ready Player One came out, but you know what I'm saying, just the virtual reality game, and then and then also a little bit of The Running Man, you know, which was a The Running Man was a movie I wore out as a kid. I mean, I watched that thing a million times on VHS, and now I haven't seen it since then. I haven't seen it in probably 20 years, but I think a lot of stuff just subconsciously went in there, and you know, stuff like and even maybe even a little bit of like RoboCop, when you where you've got like world building by showing like television commercials for the contestants and stuff like that, you know, like or for action figures and things like that. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of influences here, but whether I was like, I really was just trying to make a super fun dinosaur movie in a new way, like in a way that we hadn't seen a dinosaur movie yet.
Yeah. And so I personally just real quick, and I'll throw it over to you. I think you succeeded in that. I thoroughly enjoyed this one. So yeah,
Thank you very much. Here.
So my first thought was Death Race 2000 with David Carradine. But yeah, I didn't even think about Running Man.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, a lot of these movies, like I'm sure, like Battle Royale, Hunger Games, everything, I'm sure they had some influence as well. Running Man is an older movie, and so it's I'm sure some of that came from that as well.
I mean, the Hunger Games was an influence too, you know, and stylistically. I read one review that kind of made me laugh, where the reviewer said, "Well, at least in the Jurassic Games, they had a hollow table that actually made sense for them to have it there." I'm like. Another giant franchise that had a hollow table. it made me laugh. Hey, I like the Hunger Games. That was cool. But, you know, I think it's just, like I said before, it's a mix of the things that make these big action movies fun. And, you know, like my real thing was just, oh, cool. Convicts versus dinosaurs in a virtual reality game. What can I do with that? And it was fun.
Right.
I wanted something that was fun. And, you know, the host says at one point, anything can happen in the Jurassic Games. That's what makes it so much fun. And it's really true. It's what makes it fun to write, you know, because I love the stuff like the little maze that they have to do, you know, and then the guy ends up kung fu fighting a raptor, and then they end up being chased through the maze with laser guns and raptors and stuff. It's just like, there's really no, this is the one place where you can have laser guns and raptors, and it makes sense to have laser guns and raptors and kung fu fighting. So that's what I thought. It was fun.
I really...
Oops, sorry about the ringing there.
Katie's there.
Yeah, Katie. Yep.
No, actually, Katie is on set.
Oops, sorry?
Katie is filming right now. They just called her back.
Oh, okay. So just have her text us when she gets free. I got a text from her. That's why we called. So just have her give us a text, and we'll add her back in. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, anything can happen on Wicked Horror Show.
I know.
That's why it's so much fun.
Exactly. Wolfie, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, it was something that I found kind of interesting is that most of his characters in this movie are named after serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's kind of like a nod. That's kind of like a nod to the movie Cube, where all the people in the main are named after prisons.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that I'm, you know, super clever in that way, but it was really more just like a desperation of a way to come up with names for people. And so I just started doing, I started doing research on serial killers. I started doing research on like what kind of, you know, I wanted a sort of a diverse background for all these guys. So I started reading about people and started reading about like, seeing names of people. And I didn't take like the whole name, but I took like Albert and Mason for a last name, and Tucker and things like that, that might have been like news stories or people that were serial killers, and kind of just, you know, threw them in there as names. But you know, it's not like it was more just because I wasn't creative enough to come up with original cool names, you know.
I like that stuff. And the prison that Stephanie went to was named Starkwinter, which is Charlie Starkwinter.
Yeah.
Who was a 18-year-old killer back in Nebraska in the 1950s. Killed 11 people, hung out with his 13-year-old girlfriend, killed her parents, and was the last execution in Nebraska until the 1990s.
You're Glenn, great. You know way more about him than I do. Yeah. So That's cool. One thing about Stephanie and her character was that she was the killer. I mean, it was fun coming up with ways that like what they were infamous for. And hers was that she broadcast all of her, you know, she was a Black Widow sort of that seduced men and then broadcast her you know, her kills on live, you know, like what we're doing now. I mean, people at first thought it was a hoax, but then it was real. She was really doing that. And I saw one reviewer say, you know, if this movie spawns people really doing that in the future, won't the filmmakers feel terrible? And I was like, yes, I would feel terrible.
I'm a human being, so yes.
Yeah. I'm not actually trying to, like, come up with, like, ways for people to kill people here. I'm just making, but I thought, wow.
People are just overly preachy, I guess. Like, there's definitely way worse out there that they should be worried about.
Yeah, good. Okay, thanks for making me feel better.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, you brought up the section where there was like the games and stuff, and they were doing the maze and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I was like, when the maze was brought up, because they gave the rundown of how the game was going to go, they mentioned the maze thing, and I was just like, how is that going to work? Like, and then the start of it with the finger thing mm-hmm. with the maze, I thought that was awesome. Like I was like, oh, that's very smart. I never would have thought of that.
But, oh, cool. Yeah. Well, that's a funny story about that, because talking about practical versus CG, right? And we're talking about, well, originally I got that idea from an episode of Survivor that I watched, where they actually had real chains in a maze that was much smaller than that in our movie, but it was a little maze they had to get out of with their chain, and then they pop free from their chain. And I thought, that's cool, because what that does is it doesn't give a strong big guy any advantage. It just, everybody is on an equal playing field in that. So I went to Chris, who's a producer, but also built our sets and stuff. And I was like, man, okay, so I want this board that's a maze that they're going to stick their chains in, and they're going to have to maneuver their chains out of this maze. And he was like, okay, well, I'll get started on it. I mean, this was probably 3 or 4 days before filming those scenes. And he routers out one of them. And he'll admit, it sucked. It looked terrible. Like there was no, it looked so bad. And he was like, this guy's a good carpenter. And he was like, man, it's going to take me forever to make 8 of these things, like, you know, 4 feet by 3 feet or whatever, cut out perfectly, like these maze shapes out of wood. He's like, I can't do it. And so I was like, yeah, okay, we got to think of something else. So then we thought, okay, let's do foam core. And we cut the maze out of foam core, and it looked even worse. And when you tried to move through it, it was like all floppy and looked terrible. And so like, we're literally like 0 hour. And he's like, look, man, I can make 8 green screens. And we'll put it up there and we'll just figure it out later. And that's what we ended up doing. And in hindsight, what I wish I would have done is had the actors, I wish I would have drawn a pattern in another shade of green for them to trace on there, because all the actors just did completely random maze movements that made it an absolute nightmare for us.
I was actually thinking that. I'm like, how did they figure out where to, because there was a couple other scenes too where they're like, they reach up and they like touch something and they spin it. And I'm like, how do they know where to go? Like,
they didn't. It was just us trying to figure it out later. And like, you know, so it's like, okay, well, his hand goes completely diagonal across the maze. So just cut a way through so he can go through it. And it's really funny because, you know, the guy who wins, the cannibal, you notice if you watch that back in slow motion or just rewound or whatever, he totally cheats. He like skips over like 4 walls to get to the end. And at that point, we're just like, you know, fine, you know. But I'm glad that you like it, because I thought it would be a cool idea to have them have to solve a puzzle to get a prize, and then they were open into the real maze where the raptors came and chased them through this real maze, which was really, really fun to do. That was like, it was simply in 120 by 20 area that we built these panels, 8x8 panels, and just stacked them in all different configurations, like L's and T's and different shapes for the maze, had the actors all running through it. And then we just cut it all together, and it made it seem like, I was happy because it made it seem like it was in this giant, you know, endless maze that was sort of like confusing and disorienting because it all looked the same. So
yeah,
that was fun. And then when the raptors come through the maze, that's entirely CG. Even the maze itself is entirely CG. So we were able to play with that later and have the raptors do sort of what we wanted to do based on the edit stuff. So that was kind of one of the highlights for me. Also, the guy who did the kung fu scene, which one of my favorite scenes of the movie is when he kung fus the raptors in the maze with his chain. And in the script, he was just supposed to get stuck there, and then the raptors came and just ate him. But he saw the script and he came to me on the day of shooting and said, okay, I know that I'm stuck to a chain. I know I get eaten by raptors, but I just want you to know that I'm an expert in chain martial arts. And I was like, whoa, okay, cool. I didn't know this until the day that he comes to set. And he takes his chain prop and starts like whipping it around and doing all this stuff, like coming inches from all of our faces. We were all just kind of like, you know, but it was pretty impressive. And I was like, man, okay, let me rethink this. So how about, you know, your chain gets blown off by Tucker, and so it's connected to your arm, and you have it now as a weapon. And we choreographed, he and I together choreographed this fight where he's basically fighting nothing, you know, for 45 seconds. And then our animators came in and like had to figure out how the Raptors were reacting to all the stuff that he was doing. And so it was really fun to see all that come together, because at the end of it, when it's all put together, I'm like, man, that's so cool. And it wasn't even in the script.
Yeah.
You know? And it's one of those scenes that everyone's like, I love they made a meme out of it and stuff. And people are like, I just watched a trailer where a guy roundhouse kicks a Raptor in the face and stuff. And it's just like, it's like, yes.
That was one of the coolest things in that scene. In that scene, it was one thing that I thought was, I mean, it was kind of like, you know, obviously you're dealing in a small confined space, but I was just like, at least those Raptors had the common courtesy to wait until he fought that one. Because like, you know, yeah. I was like, there's just two of them hanging up, like, all right, what next? Whatever.
Yeah. That's classic Bruce Lee, man, though, right? That's classic. Yeah, like, yeah. I always thought that too when I was a kid. I was like, man, there's 20 guys surrounding Bruce Lee. Why are they waiting one at a time? You know?
It's because we're attackers.
And the two of the Raptors are hanging back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the two of the Raptors are hanging back on. Pete's got this.
Right.
You
know,
there's one
while
thing
I watch
you don't...
wrestling, the same thing happens then when it's like 5-on-1 and everybody just waits.
Yeah. Like, Leo's trying to say something.
Yeah.
Leo.
Well, what I was going to say is there's one thing you don't need to wait for one at a time.
Here we go.
Is bags of Deadly Grounds coffee. They're getting better, right?
Remember we told you it was bad?
That was good. I thought it was good.
Oh,
at least they didn't say, at least there wasn't a dinosaur reference in there.
True. True.
Well, if you're looking for Jurassic flavor, right? I don't know.
What the hell is that?
Okay, Deadly Grounds coffee. We absolutely love this coffee. We're going to be seeing them at Scarecon next weekend, June 15th, 16th, and 17th. But the convention's 16th and 17th. 15th for setup. They'll be giving out free samples and just awesome, awesome flavor. But don't listen to me. Here's a zombie talking about Deadly Grounds coffee.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. There's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door! Oh, they're so disgusting.
Okay, Deadly Grounds Coffee. Anthony Thurber says hello, everybody. Laura Potter says hi, guys. A bunch of people in the chat room, so if you have questions, please post them. And actually, we're going to talk about the trailer, but after the trailer, Ryan, I want to talk to you about some very cool stuff I heard you tell Wolfie during his sit-down.
Okay.
But we do have the trailer. Would you like to introduce it?
I would. Ladies and gentlemen, I now gladly present to you in HD the official Jurassic Games trailer. Roll it.
Roll.
It feels real, doesn't it? The sand on your skin, the taste in your mouth. You are no longer death row inmates. You are contestants on the greatest game show in the world, the Jurassic Games.
This is the most controversial cast we've seen on the Jurassic Games in years.
Isn't this really nothing more than exploitation of these contestants? You are essentially torturing them on live television.
Public execution is nothing new.
My client maintains his innocence.
I'm not here to kill anybody.
I'm here to kill everybody.
I am not the judge.
I quit!
We are not the jury. But the game is the execution.
Wait. Not yet. Not yet.
Come on!
Three. Two. One.
Yeah,
and then glued it all together and sanded down and painted.
So
during the trailer, we were talking to Ryan about some of the props and the helmet you may have seen in the trailer. You said was 3D printed.
Yeah, it's cool. We have a great friend named Emilio Vitt who works in Belgium, and he does our 3D printing for us, and he's been working with us for all of our movies. And it's really cool because I can either send him a concept and he'll do the 3D model and print it, or I can send him the 3D model and he can print it. But he did the helmet and the big laser guns, the neck collars. He also did the box and Gremlin and stuff. So it's really neat to be able to just, with that technology, it's really cool to be able to fabricate really anything that you could design in 3D and then have it printed out like that and have it be sturdy enough to be able to be used in the movie as a prop. The negative is that it takes a long time and it's kind of costly. So I don't really have the budget to print like three versions of a prop in case one of them breaks necessarily. So that happened to us. Our big laser cannon, I mean, on the first day of shooting, our big laser cannon broke in half somehow. And, you know, so you can actually see in the movie, if you pause, when they're fighting up on the cliff and the gun kind of slides toward the end of the cliff, there's a close up of it. If you look hard enough, you can see gaff tape like taping it back together. So you know, that's there's stuff like that that's, you know, it's unavoidable, and we're filming and we're like, oh, we'll just fix that later, we'll erase the tape later and post, and then like I see it later and I'm like, oh, we forgot to fix that.
But now it's something to look for, like, if you know, yes, I got you in a movie, I didn't notice it, so now I'm gonna have to find it.
Yeah, there's another one too I noticed that I never noticed yet is we're doing our world premiere this week at the Dead Center Film Festival. So we did a 4K DCP, which is, you know, it's the file that they play it in the theater. And so this is the only time the movie will be shown in the theater. So I went to go test it and watch it by myself in the theater. It was really cool. And 4K, 70-foot screen, you know, surround sound was awesome. And when Adam Hampson plays Anthony Tucker, is being hung and he's hanging there, there's like four shots where the carabiner that's like holding him up is like completely visible. I mean, it's there. like it's just like, oh, are you kidding me? We could have erased that out easily, but no, it's, you can obviously see he's like harnessed up and being held up by that thing. I'm just like, we can put three dinosaurs fighting each other, but we can't erase that. But it's fine. It's stuff. Yeah, he said it's
the thing is that the thing is that you're not the only one that happens to. We see movies that are made by, you know, big budget people, and they leave screw ups in them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because we do scrutinize everything and every edit and every frame, and, you know, but there's stuff just gets missed, you know, because there's a lot that goes on. You know, by comparison, Gremlin had 150 visual effects shots in it, and Jurassic Games had 700 visual effects shots in it. So for our team, it was really an ambitious undertaking to get all of those shots organized and done, and then as consistent as possible, because I had more artists now working on it. So to get everything looking kind of like it belonged in the same movie was a challenge. And then, you know, getting everything delivered on time and just that many shots, I had never attempted anything like that. The team really rose to the occasion. I'm really proud of them because, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but, you know, if I was going to critique it, you know, my biggest thing would be like, well, I wish that we could have had the time to be more consistent with the visual effects that look really, really great. I wish I could have had them really, really great all throughout the whole movie. But we just kind of ran out of time and resources. And but again, you know, we learn and get better, you know, each movie, I hope. And we'll just, next time, we'll figure out how to do it better. You know?
Going back to, like, you were saying the little things that, you know, you could have taken out or whatever. But that's actually the fun thing, because you see a lot of these movies now, you look at, you know, The Hobbit, and you see the little car going in the background, or like, or Gladiator, where the thing goes up and you see the air jet. Like, it's the fun things. People pick that out and watch the movie over and over again to watch it. So you get someone watching it like four or five times to pick out the little Easter eggs and stuff. So I think that's fun.
Well, that's cool. There's definitely some of those in there. There's also, speaking of Easter eggs, the scene where they're talking about Stephanie's background, and it shows the YouTube killing sort of. all of the little videos that are on the side on the YouTube channel are all little Easter eggs and nods to our other movies and other things. There's like an ad for ancestors.com thing from Army of Frankenstein. There's a lot of cool little things that I didn't know they were doing until I saw that finished, and I was like, wait a minute, and I paused it and looked at it, and I got a big kick out of it because they were all like little homages to our other movies and stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. So if you followed your career and, you know, it's that was loud.
Was that giant
ding?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I followed my career, so it was fun for me to see.
I'm going to have to see Army Frankenstein if I'm going to, you know, follow your career. Yes,
exactly. You are. I'm sorry. You're going to have to.
No, yeah. There's no reason to apologize. Some of my favorite movies people will consider garbage, you know? Like, there's movies that I absolutely love, but I like the charm of how bad it is.
Man, movies are like when you're making them, they're kind of like a, I don't know, like a girlfriend relationship or something that could be like, and no offense to people that are have great relationships with girlfriends. I'm just saying, like, you sort of get to a situation where you are madly in love with it, and then you you sort of like, you know, you're over the moon, and then you can't stand it, you know, and then it's like, I hate this thing. I but then later on you're like, well, no, there's some things about that I like. There's some good things about it. And I think that's kind of where I am with Army of Frankenstein now. I'm like, I went through a phase where I couldn't watch one more second of it one more time. But then now I can, you know, I saw a little bit of it the other day, and I was just kind of like, I was like, you know, wow. I mean, there's some things in there. I can see the beginnings of things that we did that I'm proud of still. And you know, I think from the beginning, from all of these things, I want to just try to make something ambitious. I want to try to put something on the screen that nobody's seen, you know, and that was the appeal for Army of Frankenstein for us, was that I had never seen big lumbering green Frankenstein monsters fighting in the Civil War. So let's do it. And, you know, it's the same thing with, you know, the Jurassic Games and some of the stuff. I've never seen a guy kung fuing a raptor. So let's do it.
Yeah. And that was,
I mean, Army of Frankenstein got put out by Scream Factory. So, I mean, they must have liked what they saw. So that's the addition I have. So,
well, thank you. I love Scream Factory. They're cool.
Yeah, I agree. So you were talking about how your team like really came together with this. Like, what was the turnaround time like from beginning to end to do this? And how many people are on your team? Like, how many people did this?
Man, I mean, we looked at the credits on this movie when they were rolling, and we were like, wow, that looks like a real movie. Because, you know, it was like over 100 people, you know, worked on this movie as far as like the cast and crew. And then the visual effects itself, you know, we had at one point in crunch time, I had 15 people working on getting all those visual effects shots done, which for us is big, because on Gremlin it was 2 or 3 or 4 people working. So, you know, I had a lot more people that were focused on, I brought in some freelance guys and made our team bigger kind of temporarily just to finish this thing. But it took us from January of last year, was when we conceptualized it and wrote it, and we shot it in March, and then we finished it literally 2 months ago. So probably about 15 months, 16 months, wow, you know, total to get this thing done. Yeah. Well, we had a deadline to meet because we wanted to make sure we got it out, you know, in conjunction with another deadline.
Hello.
There's Katie.
Hey, Katie.
Hi, I'm sorry. They called me back on set and they were losing light, so I had to run.
We understand. It's, you know, that's a priority. It should be.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm sorry that happened.
That's okay. So, yeah, we're just talking to Ryan about the movie. And for the people that haven't seen it, do you want to maybe talk about your character a little bit?
Sure. Okay. So I play the role of Joy, and Joy is the youngest person on death row, and so she is thrown into these games, and it's funny because she is the youngest, but she's also one of the most ruthless, and it was obviously, no pun intended, such a joy to play her, because she is just so different, and I think that her personality, however vile it is, was just amazing and a treat to get to play. So she has a lot of run-ins with the star Adam Hampton. And I think that the chemistry between the two characters was great in a horrible way. but yeah, she's a trip, definitely.
Nice. So yeah, we all enjoyed the movie quite a bit. So congrats on that. That's a, you know, it's another cool one. You were also in Gremlin, which is one of Ryan's movies as well. So
yes.
So do you have plans to work with Ryan in the future as well, you think?
I certainly hope so. It was so great working with him and his team the first two times, and I do not think I have any plans to not work with him in the future. So it's up to him.
Well, what's great about having someone like Katie, and I don't want to take much of her time because I know she's got limited time here, but you know, when you find an actress like that can do what she can do, then it's really great to be able to write for that actress. So like Joy was written for Katie in mind, you know, and that's, I think that's really cool to be able to sort of know who that's going to be and then be able to write to an actress's strengths. Katie's got a lot of strengths as an actress, and I had no doubt in my mind that she could pull off Joy and make her one of those memorable characters in the movie.
Yeah. And one of the things I think I want to say I brought up with Gremlin as well is that, the acting was pretty much like on point the whole time. Like, especially with like some lower budget, like smaller movies, you'll see like weak links here and there. And I don't remember that in Gremlin, and I don't remember that in this one either. It's like, so everyone kind of knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. I don't know how everyone else feels, but again, that's what kept the movie, you know, interesting too, is, you know, everyone was compelling, you know, so great job on that. And awesome.
Yeah, because you got a little bit of everyone's like personality. You didn't need to know everything about them, but you got everything about them kind of deal. Like, you knew what they were without having to be told, okay, this is this person, this is this person. You know, their characters and their acting kind of, you know, made everything apparent. Okay, these two were brothers, and this is this person. And well, I mean, they told you one of the guys was cannibal, but, you know, just the way he acted.
Like his whole backstory or anything, but that's all they need to do is tell you that part, and you're like, all right, that's the dude that you don't want to be left alone with. Like, that's the guy that's eat your face. Yeah.
Now, Katie, absolutely. I know you don't have too much time, but what is your most memorable experience from on set?
Oh, my gosh. There were so many. I can tell you that much. Probably my most memorable experience was we were out at Little Sahara, which was the desert scene, and it was our last day of kind of official filming on set. And it was me and Adam that were we were there, and at the very end of the day, they called us all together, and they kind of applauded us for our hard work and told us how important. I got some flowers, and Adam got some beer. And I don't know, it was awesome because it really brought home the crew that I was working with and the other cast, and it was more of a, it had all grown, and
the phone's cutting out.
I think we're losing you there,
Katie. Oh, can you hear me now?
Oh, we can.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It was just amazing to feel that from the entire crew. And
the dinosaurs are interfering with the signal.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. can you hear me now?
We can.
Yeah. It's funny because you're going back into what you were saying, and then right as soon as you're getting to something new, it get cut out again.
Right. It is the dinosaurs. They found me here.
Anyways, yeah. I mean, we like we said, you know, we know that you're limited on time. So, I mean, if the phone's cutting out and stuff like that, and if you need to go, I mean, we understand completely.
Yes, I'm on a really big ranch and there's limited reception, so I'm going to let you guys go. Thank you so much. And Ryan, I will see you soon.
All right, Katie. See ya. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming
Bye.
On. Thank you, Katie.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
That was Katie, everybody.
Yeah.
Katie Burgess. She's,
yeah, it's yeah. another reason why you need to see Jurassic Games.
Exactly. So she's really good. Yeah.
You answered one of my questions. I was going to ask if you wrote certain scenes, like certain characters for specific people, because you had, I can't think of his name.
Adam Hampton, too. Yeah.
Adam.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, because they were the two main.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Gremlin for this. Mm-hmm. So I was like.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really cool because Adam and Katie both sit out in Gremlin and we're getting a lot of attention for that. And when we wanted to move forward with Jurassic Games, we were like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, we have people that we know are great and will do a great job. And both those roles, Anthony Tucker for Adam and Joy for Katie, were both written for them. One thing I want to bring up is that Adam is a great actor, but he's also a writer and a director too. And he makes films and I brought him on early in Jurassic Games as we were talking about it. And after we had talked to him about playing the character to help me write. And we had a lot of like brainstorming sessions. I remember sitting at Buffalo Wild Wings a lot of times talking about how to make these characters do exactly what you were saying, which is how do I make you understand this is a bad guy and how do I give you as little as information as possible and have the audience understand what they need to understand about this character. And Adam is so cool because he was like, we should have Tucker be more like, Mad Max in the newest Mad Max movie, where he doesn't really talk very much. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a man of few words, and like he's everything that you learn about him, you learn through his actions. And he's kind of a strong, silent type. And then there would be lines of dialogue that I would have for Tucker that we would move to other characters just to give Tucker more of the strong, silent type. And I thought that made it cool for him. And then when he has the chance to tell his story, he tells it, and he's like, he gets to the point, but that's all he really ever says. I mean, it's just very clear that he's in there for one reason, because it's the only way he can get back to his children. And Adam was a big part of coming up with all the different motivations for those characters and helping me figure out the puzzle of how to keep this story super concise. I thought if I did it Suicide Squad style and went back and told everybody's backstory in a flashback, that it would be cumbersome and really bog down the movie, when I wanted to move the movie forward and just have everybody's backstory told when we needed to, and in little tiny chunks, and you just kind of got what you needed. So Adam was really helpful with that. He helped me a lot.
I'm glad you didn't do it Suicide Squad style, because I hated that movie. So
well, it's pretty common knowledge that a lot of people didn't like that movie, and we knew that we had a Suicide Squad style problem to solve, which was how do you take 10 characters and introduce them in a way that isn't going to be, okay, I finally introduced all these guys, now let's have them all fight dinosaurs. It's like, I can't do that. I have to introduce them, in a way that still keeps the story flowing and still keeps it interesting. So that's why you sort of are learning about the people you need to learn about as we're going, and
it's more organic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I still a little bit of, you can cheat a little bit, right? So like, we learn about Stephanie and Fairweather or Starkweather Penitentiary because the newscaster's talking about it. We learn about a few of the other characters because we show a few of them in the show's intro, stuff like that. So, you kind of get, there's little bits and pieces that you can pick up. And if you pause the screen and read about them, you get more about them. But it really, to your point, you said earlier, it's not about everybody's backstory. It was the fact that okay, I have two guys that I want to have be in a kind of a, have a oh gosh, what's the word? They're working together, an alliance. But I don't want to have to explain how they got an alliance. So I'll make them brothers. So it's obvious that they would have an alliance, and that's that kind of stuff. It's just like, I wanted this movie to move fast. And those were kind of the things that we did. So
I like that little with the TV show where it's like, oh, you got this guy and this, just like a 10-second blurb about what it is, what you have here. And then you see their character develop more and understand a little bit more from, the way they act and the way they talk, as opposed to, okay, here's my entire story. I like that. So
yeah,
thanks.
You did a good job.
Thanks. And I had a lot of fun with the sort of the B story of the cavemen, and which is the group that's kind of against the games, and then how they have someone on the inside that's kind of infiltrating the games. And I like that because you get a chance to write someone that's a good guy, maybe, or maybe they're a bad guy, and maybe what they're doing at the end of the movie is like considered, well, is that like, I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, she kind of went off the rails. And so you've got, and then you got the host of the show, who's you're thinking, oh, he's the bad guy, but is he? Because he's just doing his job, you know, he's just doing what he, and so those kind of things were really fun to write. I love writing bad guys that are thinking that they're doing what they're doing is the right thing to do. That's really fun and interesting. And then, but then inside the game, you've got Joy and Tucker, who Joy is obviously a psychotic, crazy person, bad. And then you've got Tucker, who is, you know, obviously the other side, you know, good. And so you've got these like very easy to understand clash between those two guys. And I left it that way. But then out in the real world, the villains and the characters were more sort of complex with their motivations. And it was really fun to write that stuff. Something that I think surprises people about this movie is that when they see the title or the trailer, they're thinking, oh, this is a B movie about dinosaurs eating people. And it's going to be kind of shallow or one dimensional. And one of my goals was to make the story a little bit more interesting to follow. And I think by adding that B story that went through it, we got to see, you know, that's what was fun about doing a television show idea was that, oh, well, you know, if this is really going on in the near future, I bet there'd be people that would be against it and think it's, you know, immoral or, you know, or whatever. So it was fun to write that stuff and to think about how that would really kind of play out in the real world and to have those stories intertwine. And, you know, I was satisfied with the way it ended because they kind of, you know, at the end of the movie, they kind of meet up together. And it's fun. It's fun for me to write that.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of trailer, we're going to show the trailer again for those of you joining us. Daniel John says, hey, all. Dave Schneider says, good evening, everybody. And here we go. Here's the trailer for Jurassic Games.
Mention of a trailer.
Yeah, I know.
It feels real, doesn't it? The sand on your skin. The taste in your mouth. You are no longer death row inmates. You are contestants on the greatest game show in the world, the Jurassic Games.
This is the most controversial cast we've seen on the Jurassic Games in years.
Isn't this really nothing more than exploitation of these contestants? You are essentially torturing them on live television.
Public execution is nothing new.
My client maintains his innocence.
I'm not here to kill anybody.
I'm here to kill everybody.
I am not the judge.
I quit!
We are not the jury. But the game is the execution.
Wait, wait, wait. Not yet. Not yet.
Come on!
Three. Two, one.
Yeah, because originally we had Adam killing that character, and Katie's just sort of still being the damsel in distress, kind of. But it didn't work. It didn't work in the edit because it didn't make Adam set up to be sympathetic. You know, like I thought it would. I thought he'd be sympathetic because he saved her, but it needed to be where he wasn't the killer. He wasn't going to kill anybody. And when she picked up the rock and killed the guy, we immediately said, okay, she's the bad guy. He's the good guy. And I love those lines too, because it's like, he says, I'm not here to kill anybody. And she says, I'm here to kill everybody. And that's like, immediately you understand he's the good guy. She's the bad guy.
I was like, oh, okay. She's badass. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
yeah, and it's cool because she kind of, in the beginning of that scene, she's kind of just like watching and waiting to see what's going to happen. You don't really know why she's there or what's going on. And yeah, she reveals that she's out for blood. So
we are back, and I know we had a little audio issue with Wolfie, but he should be back. So Wolfie, what would you like to add to the conversation?
I was just sitting here being quiet. That's all. No, Ryan, we talked a little bit earlier on Sit Down about the fact that you had Ryan Merriman, you know, in this movie playing the host, which is awesome. But you were also saying that whenever we see him in the Sabretooth helmet, it's not him, except for one scene.
Correct. Yeah. So Ryan is awesome. Ryan Merriman is awesome, man. That dude was the coolest guy to work with ever. And, you know, I mean, I know you hear stories of guys that have had success in the industry and, you know, maybe be hard to work with or whatever, but I mean, this guy was great. And he, was having so much fun and he was such a pro. He elevated everybody around him. But, you know, I mean, with our budget being what it was, we could only afford him there a certain amount of days, you know. So we decided that out to save a little bit in our budget, we had, and even the reason why we had a helmet in the first place was to have that character be out in the game, but it would be done by another actor that was doing all the motions. So we had a guy named Daniel, who was a really good actor, come in, and he studied Ryan's he studied Ryan's movements and the way that he moved and talked and gestured, and he kind of copied those, and I think did a great job, because I don't think that anyone would ever tell that that's not Ryan Merriman in the mask, you know, talking. It's Ryan's voice because he recorded his voice, but it wasn't Ryan in the mask, except for the very first time you see the character in the lake, where he's explaining to all the characters what he wanted, you know, their role in the game and how the game works. Ryan read the script and said, "Man, I really want to be there for that day. I want to be there for that day because that's the first scene of the movie with the character, and I want to sort of set the tone for what this character is going to be like." And we were like, "Man, that's so cool that he cares enough about this to like want the movie to be as good as it can be." And he's like, "I'm going to be out there to do that." So that place was literally in the middle of nowhere. And so we were camping out a bunch of nights shooting out there in sort of like a summer camp style, you know, tent deal. And he's like, "Man, I'm going to stay overnight. I'm going to cook you guys burgers and we're just going to have a great time." And he did, man. He came out and cooked us all these like unbelievable onion burgers and just sat and drank some beers with us and we had a lot of fun. It was really, really cool. It was an awesome experience working with him. And, you know, we had Perry Reeves on the show too, who played Savannah. And she is from Entourage and Old School. And, you know, she's been working in Hollywood as an actress for a long time. And another person that just came on with a lot of enthusiasm and excitement for the project. And, you know, those guys come on and they work. You know, those guys know what they're doing. They come on and they're ready, they're prepared, and they come in and just work really hard. And it's neat to see the local cast and crew sort of get to see their work ethic and what they're doing. And then it's also cool for the local cast and crew to be like, "Yeah, we can elevate to this and we can hang with this and we could be, you know, we're just as worthy of being in this movie as anyone else is, you know." And I think that's really good for everybody's morale to be on a set where, you know, everybody's lifting each other up and trying to work to make the product as good as possible and buy into it. And there was never a feeling of anybody that was like, "Well, this is beneath me," you know, or anything like that. Nothing ever like that. It was always very much like, "No, I'm in this to make this the best thing that we can make it together." And that was something that was really, really cool.
Nice. Well, another cool thing you were saying about Ryan was the fact that he came off the plane and he told you exactly how he wanted to play the character.
That's right. That's right. I admit, man, I was a little starstruck by Ryan because I was familiar with, you know, Luck of the Irish and his work. And more recently, you know, he was in 42 and he was in Pretty Little Liars and stuff. And not that I watched a lot of Pretty Little Liars, but I recognized him and I was a little nervous, and he came off the plane and gave me this big hug, man, just like, and immediately put me at ease because he said, "Man, I love this character, and if you don't mind, I'm going to play him just like evil Ryan Seacrest." And I was like, "Yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly what I think he nailed evil Ryan Seacrest when you watch the movie."
Oh, yeah.
I think he did, and he had a great time. We had a lot of fun with him. He's really cool.
Yeah. It was, yeah, very,
I'm
very
with you. I think.
Sorry, go ahead, Wolfie.
No, I'll just say this one last thing and toss it back to you, Kev. But I'm with you. I think Ryan Merriman he's one of the most underrated actors because I've known who he was going back to The Pretender. He played young Michael T. Weiss in that show. And that show spawned so many people. I mean, we got Merriman out of it. We also got Jeffrey Donovan, who did the show with Bruce Campbell down in Florida.
Burn Notice.
Burn Notice.
Yeah.
Well,
and, yeah. And
it just, yeah.
I hope, you know, what I want to say about Ryan is, like, not only is he great, he's a pro, and the guy's like got a photographic memory of like memorizing lines. I mean, the guy's amazing about that. But man, he's the nicest guy in the world, you know, and like it really can affect the set if somebody comes on there with the attitude of like, "Hey, I'm with you guys." And there was a moment that I knew he was on board and it's at the end of the movie. I don't want to give it away, but he ends up in the desert. And we shoot that in our green screen studio, and there's a little sand on the floor, and then the green screen's behind him, and it's the last thing he's shooting with us. And I was like, originally he's just supposed to be standing there and says what he says, and then what happens happens. And then we were shooting it, and I was happy with it, but I thought to myself, you know, it'd be a lot better if he was on the ground with sand in his face, and he woke up like in the sand, you know. And by the way, the suit he's wearing is his suit that he brought with him. Mm. It wasn't from. So I said, hey, Ryan, look, man, I hate to ask you this. You can say no, but would you mind doing one more take where you lay in the sand and fill your face up with sand and get it all over your clothes and all in your clothes and wake up like you're waking up in the sand, you know, into the game? And he looked at me for like a split second. I could see like a moment of hesitation, and he was like, let's do it, man. and then from there, he like went face down into the dirt and then did two or three takes of this like that and got up and kind of brushed himself off. And he was like, all right, man, that's cool. And he was just, I thought, man, this dude's cool. You know, it was really neat. It was really neat because he could have easily been like, yeah, no, thanks. I don't want to do that. You know, I'm totally cool with that.
What I was going to say before is that I really think that he was a great choice for that character. And I think he killed it. Like, he was very believable as that host, you know, even though it's, you know, it's acting, you know, obviously that's not what he does, but he sold it like very well. Speaking of selling things, I'm not going to bring up coffee here. No. when can people buy this movie?
Well, it'll be available on streaming and VOD June 12th. So coming up very soon, June 12th. And then July 3rd, it'll be in stores at Walmart, things like that, July 3rd. So you'll be able to get it there on DVD. So, and then I think you can pre-order it now on Amazon for a July 3rd release. So,
any special features on the physical release?
Absolutely. We've got a director's commentary that has myself, Adam Hampton, who played Tucker, and it's got Stephanie Roach, who's our lead animator, who did our dinosaur animations, talking about the CG and the effects. And then we've got producer Chris Hoyt, editor Andy Swanson, producer Josh McKamey. So we go a lot into the technical and the background. A lot of the stories I've told here, we tell there, but we go even deeper into stories of almost every scene in the movie. We've got a few deleted scenes, but the movie was written so tightly that we didn't really have very many deleted scenes because we just kind of, it was one of those deals where the final runtime was kind of short. So we like had to like put everything in the movie we could to get it to be a full like, feature-length movie. So there's a few sort of not really deleted scenes, but there were scenes that we like shot and then reshot them because they didn't work or something. Mm-hmm. So we've got some of those. We've got a little kind of like behind the scenes sort of montage sort of put together with some behind the scenes video and some music and stuff. So yeah, there's some pretty neat special features on the disc. That's pretty cool.
Nice. We're big just fans
so
of guys, special
so
features.
Is this going to be cool. Go ahead, Julius.
No, we have a question on YouTube. I'm not going to murder this person's username, but I am going to ask the question. So what was the toughest onset hurdle?
Oh, well, the toughest onset hurdle had nothing to do with dinosaurs. It had to do with the physicality of the actual fighting between the convicts. And there was quite a few pretty brutal fight scenes in the movie, and you know, there were ones that took like, you know, 7 hours to film something that lasted a minute on screen. And our actors are, like I said, we didn't have stunt doubles for the actors, so these guys were really putting everything into making these fights look believable. And you know, Adam had a moment where he got pretty severely sick, you know, from the heat and just pushing himself to the point where, you know, it was very hard for him. I mean, even the guys who weren't fighting were sweating buckets. It was really hot and humid. And so I think getting those fight scenes, working, was very difficult in the outside locations. But you know, the stuff with people sometimes think of, oh, what's it like acting with dinosaurs or CG creatures, or how do you do it, or what's it like? And for us, it's pretty easy actually, because you just point the camera at where the dinosaur should be. And then it's like, yeah, there's that, pretend there's a dinosaur running here. The guy just points the camera there, and that's pretty much it. You don't have to have the dinosaur do take after take after take, you know? So yeah, I think the biggest thing, maybe the hardest thing, was the fight scenes. The set that we built was very challenging because the futuristic TV show set was a set that we built at our studio. And it took Chris, one of our producers, he reminded me a lot that it took him 43 days to build that set. And he did it pretty much by himself. I mean, we had a guy named Dave help us a little bit, and some of us came in and helped paint, but that guy built that entire set, you know, pretty much by himself. And it was pretty cool. And walking in there, especially when, you know, Ryan Merriman and Perry Reeves walked in there for the first time, they were like, whoa, you know? And so it was, I was happy with the way that turned out on camera, because like once we added all the screens and the hollow desks and stuff in there, it was like, yeah, this works for me. It works for a futuristic, you know, science fiction-y kind of TV studio.
Yeah, that looked great.
I think so.
And the username was H.C. Wallohan.
Oh.
Ah.
So
good old that name.
Yeah.
Let's somebody else do that one.
Yeah.
I don't mind Wolfie butchering it.
Wolfie's trying.
I think that's Harry Wallahan, who was a producer on the movie, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wolfie?
Thanks, Harry, for writing it.
So I was just going to go back to he was talking about the sales of the movie when it comes out on physical media. Is that going to be just DVD, or is it going to be DVD Blu-ray?
Well, you know, I don't know. They don't, sometimes they don't tell me, and I just see if there's a Blu-ray available. So, I don't know. I don't know with this one. I know for, I don't know. I wish I did. I wish I could help you with that. I hope so. I know that Gremlin was the same distributor, and Gremlin had a Blu-ray. So I would hope that they would do a Blu-ray with this one too. Cause one thing I kind of like doing is collecting all of the ones that come out in the different territories, myself. Cause I just think it's fun. And, my sales agent will like see that I've ordered one on Amazon Japan, and he's like, why are you doing that, man? I have what I can give you. But I'm like, there's something about like going on Amazon Japan, figuring out how to translate it, ordering the movie, having it shipped to me. You know, it's like, there's something cool about that, you know? So he's like, okay, whatever. But I, you know, I like it. So I have the collection of all of our movies in the different territories they're in. And there's one, I think there's a Gremlin from South Korea. I think I've seen a cover for it, but I've never been able to order it. So I don't know how to buy it. So if anyone out there has the South Korean Gremlin, let me know where to get it, because I can't find it.
In my other pants, sorry.
How many copies of Gremlin do you have, then?
Well, I mean, I only have like the different ones. There was like six or seven different, maybe seven or eight different like territories that released Gremlin. So, you know, in France, it was called The Box. In the UK, it was called The Gremlin's Curse, you know, so they change the names and do different cover art and stuff. So it's kind of cool.
Well, that is pretty cool. Like, it's, yeah, that's awesome.
Speaking of Gremlin, I do have the trailer if you'd like us to play it.
For Gremlin?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, why not? Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
You can buy Gremlin now. You can watch Gremlin now.
If you like this one, then yeah, go buy it after. Yeah.
Exactly. Here's a trailer for, actually, would you like to give a brief synopsis about Gremlin?
Oh, sure. Gremlin is just a story we wanted to do about a family that's cursed by a box. And inside the box is a creature that will come out and kill everyone that, you know, that you love. The only way to get rid of the box is to give the box to someone that you love. So that was kind of a fun story to write and figure out all the rules to that. And it's just kind of, it's my attempt at making something that was dark and disturbing and kind of made you uncomfortable, you know, and that's what Gremlin is. So, check out the trailer. And if you like it, you can go see it now on Amazon Prime for free, I think.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm going to look that up.
I'm proud of you for keeping it. You didn't have to. It was very brave of you.
It's
very simple. All you have to do is give the box to someone you love. Pass it along. Do it before the timer runs out.
Grandma Mary's dead.
What happened?
This is attached to me somehow. It's a curse or something. I don't understand it. But I have to get it out of this house before it kills every one of us.
There's too many missing people and dead bodies. The only thing that's consistent with anyone's story is this damn magic box.
What happens when this timer runs out?
I don't know! Maybe it finally comes for you. Like, your time is up.
Come on!
That was the trailer for Gremlin.
Here we are. And so just so you know, Gremlin is available right now for free on Amazon Prime. So go check it out. If you like the trailer, go check it out. And then when you're done watching it on Prime and you love it, buy the physical copy of it.
Yep. And pre-order Jurassic Games.
That's right.
And Army of Frankenstein's, and not Frankenstein's Army, two separate movies.
Thank you.
That's true.
This one, yes. You can watch Army of Frankenstein's. I think on Amazon Prime for free too. I think.
Really?
I think so.
Kevin's night is now set up for him.
Yeah, for real. I'm not going to bed.
He's like, not sleeping tonight.
Yep, it's there.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
Awesome.
All right, so I'll be watching it.
Man, hey, shoot me will you do me a favor? I'm interested to hear what you think of it. When you watch Army Frankenstein's, like, shoot me a little email or something and give me your thoughts on it. I'd love to hear it.
I definitely will, yeah.
Billy Baird says, rented it at Family Video. Great movie.
Nice.
He still has a Family Video?
Who said that?
Billy Baird. He's a regular in our chat room.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Billy, where do you got a Family Video?
There's still some of them around.
Let's wait for the answer. Why don't you ask him?
Okay. I don't know.
We should probably wrap things up. So we've talked quite a bit about Jurassic Games and Gremlin and other things. But do you have anything else in the works currently?
Yes, we do, actually. We've been hired by a completely not in the same wheelhouse as this other stuff. We've been hired by a really cool distribution company called Ace Entertainment to make a kids dinosaur movie. So now we just wrapped principal photography on that, and it's called The Adventures of Jurassic Pet. And it's a kind of an ET style story about a kid who finds an egg and there's a dino in it and the government's chasing him. And it gives us a chance to do a lot of cool CG dinosaur stuff. And in more of like a, I'd call it more of like a Disney movie kind of feel, you know, kind of like a, like made for TV kind of movie. So we're working on that. There's some other stuff coming up too that I'm super excited about. So the neat thing about getting to do these movies is that they open doors for us doing other projects, which is what I want. And I want to be able to keep my team working and keep those guys, you know, everybody from the actors to the crew, to the people who do the, you know, the cool visual effects work, working, you know. And we're in this to keep doing it. And that's what's really rewarding and fun about it, is that the movies we've done have allowed us the opportunity to continue to keep doing it. And, you know, we get hopefully better every time. And I'm having a great time, man. I was saying this earlier too. It's fun to be able to have multiple projects because I get to kind of know you guys a little bit, you know, and I love being on this show. I love being with you guys and talking to you, and it's just neat to see you guys, you know, are keeping going and I'm keeping going. And it's just kind of cool. So I think it's a neat, you know, the indie film community seems like it's getting smaller and smaller, and you sort of like become friends with everybody no matter where you are in the country. It's pretty cool. So I appreciate you guys having me and checking out our movies. It means a lot.
It means a lot to us that you make them. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And I was just going to...
So is Katie involved with My Pet Dinosaur?
She's not. Katie's not in that one. But I don't, it's not because I didn't want her to be, it's just because of the scheduling really. And And but no, I mean, I want to work with Katie and Adam every chance I get, and to just kind of, you know, add to that. I mean, you know, those guys are here where I am, and well, Katie's not; she's in Los Angeles now. But still, it's like I still want to be able to find people, crew or cast, that it's like, you know, why reinvent the wheel every time if you got something that works? You know, just like keep using them, and I like that a lot. I know that's kind of common for directors to like to work with certain actors, but you know, it's more about their talent on screen. It's about their work ethic and their personalities on set, you know, and that's why I was so high on Ryan or Katie or Adam or really everybody that was on our set. It's just like, you know, there's no drama, there's no divas. It's like everyone's there to make the project as good as it can be. And, you know, as long as we're all doing that, we'll just keep doing it.
Nice.
And I was just going to bring up one thing because it popped into my head. And now, as you know, it can't get out until I speak it. you know, dinosaur movies have really been an uptick lately. We just saw one recently you might want to check out. It's a horror comedy dinosaur movie called Velocipastor.
Oh, I've seen the trailer for that. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's a really good time. It's really fun.
Is it really?
Actually, yeah. It is.
Yeah. Cool. Is that movie out yet?
It's still doing the rounds.
Maybe he's doing festival.
Yep.
Yeah.
Festival stuff. Okay.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. The minute I saw that, I shared it around with my friends. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. This is great. It's ridiculous, but yeah. It's in a very good way. Like, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's really fun.
Really cool story to it.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
Does.
And
yeah.
It pokes fun of itself because, you know, it's definitely not a high budget dinosaur movie. So, yeah, there are certain scenes that are just hilarious, like the car explosion in the beginning. And, you know, it's just,
Definitely worth checking out. Yeah, yeah, if, cool. If you get a chance. Yeah, it's a fun one.
Yep.
But cool. Thank
yeah.
you.
Sorry, go ahead, Leo.
Oh, no, we want to urge you definitely check out the show notes. I put links there to follow both Ryan and Katie. And you can find more information about the movie, The Jurassic Games. And we'll do the rundown. So, Ryan, where do you like people following you?
Oh, you know, Facebook is pretty much the only place I'm really active. Twitter, I'm on there a little, but mostly Facebook. So if you want to just find me there, it's just Ryan Belgard. And you can, you know, shoot me a message and let me know what you think of the movies. That'd be fun.
Sounds good.
If you like a movie.
If you don't like it, maybe I'm not available there.
Yeah. Right.
Yo.
You can find me at Boy Meets Phone on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you're doing your social media. I should probably be there somewhere. Also, Yo St. Laurent on those same social media channels. And of course, here in the door.
Tony.
You can find me on Tony Has Nine Fingers on YouTube, where I do movie reviews and such. Also, Tony Has Nine Fingers on Twitter and Horror Mino. You can find me on Instagram, Tony's Movies, where I show off the movies behind me. And here on the Dorkening.
Wolfie?
You can find me on YouTube, The 13th Wolfman, Twitter at The 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowl, every Sunday in the Dorkening, every Tuesday on Wicked Horror Show, doing the horror one with Kev. Of course, when we're done that, we're doing the Wicked Horror Reviews. And I'm always putting up new stuff, you know, so check out my YouTube every now and then, you know, because there's something going up. Kevin?
A Knuckle on Twitter, Instagram, every Sunday in the Dorkening, Tuesday Wicked Horror Show. You can find Leo and I and Yo-Yo at ScareCon New England on the 16th and 17th, where we'll be drinking tons of Deadly Grounds coffee and interviewing all of your favorite horror celebrities with coffee breath. Yeah. So it's going to be fun.
Lots of gum already.
And as you heard, we do this multiple times a week. This is our Wicked Horror Show every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern live. We also do a roundtable discussion about geeky topics every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And every other Thursday, we do the Ultimate Video Game Show. Next show is going to be next week, where we talk about E3, which is launching next week on the 12th, I believe. A lot of fun, but definitely check out all our shows, including Secret Underground Hideout, which has a new episode featuring Kevin this week.
Featuring me, yeah.
Yeah. And you can find those all on our podcast network as well. With that, we'll catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Peace out. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts.
If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience, where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.